Welcome, family, friends, and new friends to our podcast, They Actually Survive. I'm your host, Selena.
And I'm your co-host, Andy.
And for everybody new joining us, thank you. And I just wanted to give you kind of a synopsis about what this is and what we're doing here. So it's a lot of stories about, thrilling stories about people who have survived and overcame. We each bring about two stories, or one story each episode. And hopefully you'll enjoy it, right?
That's the hope.
Right.
Okay. I mean, we enjoy making the show. We hope you enjoy listening
yes,
to it.
Oh, yes. I wanted to go over that, too. Totally love making the show. But, you know, sometimes we're extremely animated, as we found out over these last few episodes. And we tend to hit microphones and slam on the desk and everything like that.
Keys jingle.
So our audio isn't perfect all the time.
We're working on it. We're human beings and we're working on it. Yeah, thank you for your patience.
Yeah. So, and Andy sometimes runs in the back of the room, you know, I don't know. So, but here we go. I'm going to be talking today about an actual true crime story. And I personally love true crime, and especially a survival story of true crime. I mean, do you like true crime, or?
I don't know. I feel so conflicted listening to, like, this person might have died.
Yeah.
From a murder or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's so intriguing to me, though. And survival stories are number one for me. And I love, like, the guy that everybody thought wouldn't make it, made it somehow.
Underdog story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But true crime is also always interested in me. And that's what started me on this podcast to begin with. So today I brought in a story where it's a true crime story of an actual person that survived. So we can feel good about it.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then what's your story?
My story is about a girl who was bitten by a shark.
That's awesome. I love that. Are you scared of the ocean?
Kind of, sort of. I mean, I think it's beautiful and majestic. I don't want to be in it because it's just so large and you don't know what's inside of it.
You don't go swimming?
I used to enjoy swimming in, like, pools. Uh-huh. But, you know, I've always had, like, a community pool, and those are always kind of gross, in my opinion, because you're always finding, like, Band-Aids and stuff. And so, like, I've kind of been turned off of the idea of swimming in anything other than, like, a bathtub at this point.
Yeah. We go in the ocean quite often. And yeah, there are times, like, my husband and I were just talking about that. He was swimming. It was just like last week. He was swimming in the ocean. He was, like, really deep out and he couldn't touch the ground. And he said, like, that is so creepy, you know? And you don't know what's in there because you can't, in California, you can't look down and see anything, you know? So that's creepy in itself. But yeah, should be fun. Okay. So, you want to go first today?
Sure.
Okay.
This is the story of Bethany Hamilton from 2003, October 31st. And this happened to her when she was at a very young age, but she's a professional. So, getting her first surfing sponsorship at age 9, Bethany Hamilton, age 13, was surfing with her friend's family off Tunnels Beach in Kauai, the fourth largest island of Hawaii, when she was bitten by a 14-foot-long tiger shark. The bite severed her left arm from just below the shoulder. She was reported as remaining calm and without pain throughout the entire ordeal as her friends paddled her back to shore. And along the way, she's even warning other swimmers and surfers along the way. Hey, watch out. I just got bit by a shark. There's a shark in the area. She's 13 and she's keeping this kind of, you know,
calm composure.
Warning other people, you know, really polite about it.
Everybody that you talk to or talk about, excuse me, all of your stories, I should say, seem to be about people who are very calm and courteous as they're in a life or death situation. You know what I mean?
I think an important tendency for that is kind of have to remain calm because panic.
It never works.
Let me rephrase that. There's like a good panic and a bad panic. You know, the good panic is your adrenaline kicking.
Thinking, and you don't feel pain,
You don't feel the pain. Your thinking is at its fastest and its most sharp and at its most critical. And that's what you need to, like, harness in order to get you through a situation. And then there's the bad panic where you kind of, like, want to sit and cry and wail until somehow it magically fixes itself. And you're just wasting limited time. You're wasting limited breath, limited blood, limited energy, strength, whatever.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, exactly.
So try not to panic if you ever get bitten by a shark or fall off a cliff or drive into a ravine or something like that. I mean, take your moment to freak out and assess the situation. After. But then
I think I would break down after. I think I really would. But yeah, just like when you're right in that minute, you know, and you're fighting with, say, a shark.
Right.
You're just doing everything possible to survive at that time, you know?
I mean, if you want to think about it in another way, like look at any type of organized fight, be it, you know, boxing, wrestling, not taekwondo, that's a martial arts, UFC or anything like that, MMA, they're not panicking. I mean, sure, of course, they're professionals. They've been training all about it. But I mean, who wants to get socked in the face by another professional?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you have to temper your nerves in
you
that regard.
You almost have to put yourself in that mindset.
Right.
But I mean, they have time to put themselves in that mindset. You know, they're trained professionals. But when you find yourself in a survival situation, it's like, God, you really have to dig deep at times, you know, and very fast to get yourself to safety, you know, just like her. And the fact that she was, even at 13, to be able to process that, you know, and be able to take yourself, like, and be in a calm, like, tranquil position. And, you know, that's probably good in a sense because you're pumping out blood, I'm sure. And the quieter you are, the calmer you are, the less your heart is beating. So the less blood, I would assume, you're losing medically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because your blood's not pumping, like your heart's not pumping all that blood out as fast, you know?
Not only that, but as you were losing that blood, your body is already trying to, like, shut down extra organs, you know, your non-vital stuff as well. That's part of the reason why you don't feel the pain. I think.
Yeah.
It's restricting blood to your brain, your heart, your lungs, your muscles to get you out of that situation. It's not exactly like, I gotta make sure your kidney's still functioning right now. Or your kidneys or your liver.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So once she's back on shore, they fashioned the tourniquet and she was rushed to the hospital. And by the time she arrived, she had already lost over 60% of her blood.
Oh my God. 6-0.
Yeah. So once news got out of what had happened, a family of fishermen turned in a 14-foot-long shark that they had caught about 1 mile away from the site of the attack to investigators. And the shark's mouth contained debris from surfboards, and the measurements of its mouth was comparable to the damage on Bethany's broken surfboard. So this led police to confirm that this was the same exact shark that had attacked Bethany. They had been caught and killed. And after the attack, Bethany returned to surfing using a custom surfboard about 26 days later.
What?
Entering her first major competition 1.5 months later and has returned to using a standard shortboard. So she just went right back into it. She didn't slow down from this attack, from
that
losing an arm.
Unbelievable. And, you know, us as adults, I don't think we'd jump back into I mean, I don't know. Is that the spirit of a kid? You know what I mean? Like, kind of the innocence, and they have a good outlook on life, you know?
That, and I'd say it's also because she's, like, a professional surfer, you know, even at a young age. So I think that doubles to any professional wants to return back to what it is that they do and love.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, what gives them passion.
Yeah.
Right? You'll do anything to get back in. That's so weird, though. Like, she cannot be healed. By then.
No.
I mean, so that's almost in a sense like an open wound.
Well, okay. Like, no. Maybe she has, because for the most part, it's just like her arm. It's been pretty much completely amputated.
I know, but there's a stub that still needs skin over it, doesn't it?
Yeah, but that's better than like a bullet wound in an organ. You know, there's nothing you need to survive in your arm.
Okay.
You know,
what I'm thinking, though, is, you know how they always say, like, one drop of blood and the sharks will smell you or something from forever. Yeah. I mean, she's going in there with a whole, you know, arm that's like maybe not, it was like 20 days, right?
Yeah, 26 days. I mean, she will have clotted by then, Selena.
She's dripping blood. Opens up. I just like, God, she's so much braver than I would be. I'd be like, nope, like give me a year, you know? And then it's very interesting, too, that they modified the board, because I don't know what they're exactly modifying, other than maybe the leash would be on another arm.
Yeah, I didn't look too much into it, but I got the same interpretation.
I mean, to us, doesn't a board look the same? Like,
well, there are long boards, and I think there are normal boards, and then there are short boards, so there's like three different categories.
Yeah.
And then because she's a professional surfer, I think there's like regulation boards as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So when she went back to surfing, she was using a non-regulation board for a period of time.
Probably to get her balance back, because she doesn't have the two arms.
Right.
For balance, so she kind of had to take a couple steps back, get her footing, so to
training wheels in a sense.
Yeah, and then transition back to a regular board. Yeah. How awesome is that, though?
Right.
What a great chick.
13.
Yeah, exactly. That's awesome. That was a short story for you.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that's good. Good. It's good to have variety in life, right? All right, so I'll take you to my story. This is our first true crime story. I'm hoping to get more because I really do love this. This is some of my passion. And incorporating it into a survivor story, it's like ultimate. So this takes us to Edmonton, Canada. Mm. And it's October 3rd, 2008. So it's turning into autumn. Mm. This takes us through some kind of twists and turns. So it's a really interesting case if you wanted to look into it more. I'm going to go a bit forward to get us to the story of Giles. So stay with me here. So
Giles. Got it.
Yeah, Giles. So we're going to start out with the story of John Brian Attlinger, who is a 38-year-old man. He had met a woman through a dating site and agreed to meet her at her house.
Oh, no.
Being cautious, of course, he actually emailed his friends the directions. So that was really good.
Yeah.
Now, in most cases, being a woman, when you're dating somebody or you're going out on your first date, you don't know this person and you're dating online. Of course, you're going to
take precautions.
Yes. And you would probably meet them at a public place.
Right.
But being a man, you know, he thought differently, and multiple men thought differently.
And they go straight to her home.
Yes. And what do you think? Would you be okay with that?
As a man,
you know, it's different.
I'm in a relationship right now, and my first date with my girlfriend, we met in a public place, and when I showed up there, I parked, and I texted a couple of friends, like, I'm on a date with so-and-so, and we're over here. Like, I'm taking the exact same precautions.
Yeah, that's interesting. You as a man were even taking precautions. And I think that's the smart thing to do these days.
You never know. Women could be serial killers too.
Exactly.
This is an equal opportunity country. Women are allowed to be serial killers too.
Exactly. So he did. So he was cautious. He emailed his friend directions.
Okay.
So that he would be meeting his date in case something happened to him, you know.
Yeah.
Now, some days pass. And John's friends and family have no idea where he is.
Oh, no.
This is very unlike John to disappear. This guy's really a routine kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
So John's friends start receiving really odd emails saying that he's taking a long vacation. He met somebody. He's taking a long vacation to Costa Rica.
Oh,
and
no.
Even John's boss received the same email and stating that he was quitting his job.
Oh, no.
It's not looking good. So, this immediately alerted his friends because they knew this guy and they knew something was very wrong.
Yeah.
And this goes back to some of our earlier episodes when you say, at what point would somebody know you're missing?
Right.
They knew right away because this guy, well, with the odd emails too, this guy was very reliable, you know, and he wouldn't do this. This was unlike him. So they went over to his house. They actually broke into his house to search just around, you know, and see what was going on.
Signs of life, activity, anything.
They found his passport. So they knew right away, this guy's not in what is it, Costa Rica.
Unless he forgot his passport going to Costa Rica.
How do you do that, though? You can't even get in. Okay, so they found his passport, and there was no indication that anything was packed.
Okay.
So, you know, as they found all of this information, they took it to the authorities and set up or started a missing persons report. They filed a missing persons report, and these detectives became involved. Now, back to the directions.
Okay. Yep.
So John's friend hands over the directions he was emailed in case to detectives.
Okay.
This leads them to, they follow these directions. It leads them to a rundown garage, which was rented out by Mark Twitchell, a local up-and-coming filmmaker who had an uncomfortable, odd fascination with the TV show Dexter. So, are you familiar with Dexter?
It's like a crime show?
No.
They solve murders?
No, not at all. No. Dexter is about a serial killer. It's a whole TV show about a serial killer. And basically, what this Dexter guy does, he goes out and kills criminals, people who maybe were let off by technicalities and things like that.
Okay.
So
vigilante justice.
Kind of vigilante justice. So, and I think that's, you know, for us as normal people, so we can
allow him to murder people
so
on the show.
It's more palatable for us to watch this, you know, goriness going on.
Murder is bad, but not for some people.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So that's how they're, you know, kind of, that's the twist and, you know, so it's more palatable to people.
Yeah.
So they had started investigating Mark Twitchell. They have suspicions. And they are interviewing him. This is the second interview they do. They have a suspicious interview, is what they called it, with him, where he mentions that John sold him the car before he went to Costa Rica. So
that's a totally normal thing to do.
With a man you've never met.
Yeah.
And you're suddenly being questioned, and you just kind of come up with this. And he came up with this out of nowhere, like, oh, by the way, yes, now I'm thinking about it. That night, a gentleman came to me and sold me his red car out of nowhere. And just with the money I had, he said he was going to Costa Rica. So I sold it. He sold it to me for $40. So the detectives knew right away, this is a direct link tying Mark to this missing man.
Right.
Right. Now, during the time, the investigators search Mark's own car in the garage, where they find rope, a full kit usually used. It's a full knife kit usually used to break down large game.
Oh, no.
Yes. And the most damning evidence of all, a computer.
What, so, what's wrong with having a computer?
Listen to this. What? The investigators pulled out the computer. And now, you know, this is the big thing now is evidence, you know, they can pull anything from computers nowadays.
Okay, yeah.
So don't think you're ever getting away with it. You're not.
Yeah.
So they investigate, you know, his computer. They're looking through everything. They find a deleted file that was recovered, and it was named SK Confessions. This is an eerie document. It read kind of like a screenplay for murder. It was countless pages detailing extensive planning and details of a murder. Detectives knew this was no movie script at all, but it was more of a diary of each step that Mark Twitchell had gone through to kill John Attlinger. Now, there was more to this diary. It actually spoke of a man who escaped the garage just 1 week earlier, the serial killer's failed attempt. So detectives knew they needed to turn to the media at this time to find the victim who had lived, who had actually survived. And to be able to prove that this SK Confessions was real, they needed this link.
Yeah.
So this brings us back to Giles. Now, when Giles saw the report on TV, he immediately recognized the unusual hockey mask. And it brought him back to the horror from just a few weeks earlier.
Jeez.
So he went to the police station and explained his story. And so here is his story. Giles went on a dating website, and he'd been conversing with this blonde named Sheena. Giles was drawn to Sheena since they were both new to the area, so he had just moved there.
Yeah.
And she wanted to meet up, and she had given him, like, these very detailed directions to an alley where her garage was.
Oh, no.
And had told Giles where he could park his car and that he would walk through the garage to the back door where he would, you know, then get into the house from there.
Yeah.
He was kind of wary about this. You know, he wasn't too sure about it, but he kind of chalked it up to, like, you know, first date jitters. You know? Yeah.
Wrong.
Yeah. So here we go back to listen to your gut, right? Your gut instinct. And I think he had that gut instinct, but as we all do, you kind of shove it down, right?
Right.
You think, like, oh, well, no.
Maybe I'm just freaking out. Maybe I'm overreacting.
Yeah, I'm just nervous, this and that. Giles sees the garage is open so that he's able to slightly duck into it.
So
he slightly ducks into it. It's dark. He has his hand on the doorknob. So he goes through the whole garage, has his hand on the doorknob. That would take him through the backyard and then up to her back door.
Yeah.
Suddenly, he is hit with a stun baton and looks to see who did this and sees a larger man in a black and gold hockey mask standing over him.
Jeez.
Yeah. So now from the SK confessions, we now know it's Mark Twitchell. Giles is hit over and over with 1,000 volts of this stun baton, and he is struggling with this masked man. Mark then pulls out a gun on Giles, and his eyes are covered. So for this instance, you know, he pulls out a gun, so he's like, well, I can't fight a bullet. That's what he said to himself. So he lets the guy duct tape him. Now things are starting to slow down. Giles can hear Mark walking around behind him. And he, you know, he's hearing this walking back and forth. Things are slowing down.
Yeah.
And he thinks to himself, I have one chance to get away.
Yeah.
You know, so he rips off the duct tape, rolls under the garage, because it's still slightly open.
Yeah.
Rolls under the garage. He's trying to pull his body up to run.
Yeah.
His legs weren't working. The stun gun had temporarily incapacitated him. So with all those volts going through them or through him before, it still had, you know, leftover remnants of it. Yeah, an effect.
Yeah.
So he starts to crawl down the pavement of this unpaved kind of gravel road. So he's crawling. Now, Mark comes after him, and Mark describes it in his diary as bringing him back like a caveman. So he's holding on to one of his foot.
Yeah.
And Mark, excuse me, Giles is desperately trying to, you know,
crawl
away from him. Yeah. And Mark comes after him, pulls him back with the one foot, and drags him back into the garage. Now, Guile feels like he's running out of ideas. That took a lot of strength for him to, you know,
do what he did.
Yeah, exactly.
Attempt to do what he did.
Exactly. So Guile feels like he's running out of options. At this point, you know, he's not able to run, so he doesn't know what to do, you know.
Yeah.
A little while later, he puts everything he has into his legs. He concentrates, puts everything he possibly can into his legs, fights off Mark once more.
Yeah.
And Guile gets out from the garage and starts to stand up to run.
Yeah.
And then falls again.
Oh, no.
Yes. But he's met by a couple.
Ooh.
Yes. So as he's struggling to get up, he gets his legs up. He's starting to run. He falls right over.
Yeah.
And the couple is there and they look horrified.
Yeah.
And again, he's, you know, been hit by the stun gun so many times.
Yeah.
So he's not, you know, obviously himself. He's in shock. He doesn't know what to do. So the only thing he can mutter is, I'm being mugged. That's all he can mutter.
Okay.
Is like, I'm being mugged. But at least it's something enough to, like,
trigger the help and panic.
Yeah, help. You know? Yeah, exactly. So at least it's something. You know, this couple is so frightened. They don't know what to do. I guess they didn't have cell phones because they didn't call 911.
Mm.
Okay. So they were out walking their dog and then this guy stumbles. He's on the floor. He's saying he's being mugged. This couple is staring at him. Mark comes out.
Yeah.
To go after Giles again.
Yeah.
And actually almost runs into the guy, runs into the couple.
Yeah.
And he pretends to know Giles. He's like, hey, Frank, come on, get back in here. As he's backing up, because he's not going to pull Giles. Yeah. So as Giles is on the floor, you know, he's kind of stepping back and walking away, goes back into his garage.
Right.
And Giles is able to get his bearings and his legs, gets to his car,
yeah,
where he sees Mark in the garage, and he can see him because, you know, the garage door, again, yeah, it's a little bit up. So he can see him pacing back and forth. He's so angry that he didn't get him, so to speak.
Yeah.
So in one motion, Giles said he actually slammed the car into reverse, yeah, and then got the hell out of there. So he gets home. Jeez. You know, he's safe. He looks up Sheena's profile.
Yeah.
Because he's like, he originally is thinking, I'm going to go to the police, this, yeah, and that. So he looks up Sheena's profile. It's completely deleted. Yeah. So all the evidence, all, yeah, the back and forth conversations, because her profile is deleted, is gone. So there is no evidence of her,
right,
ever existing, or of this file ever existing.
Right.
So after thinking over the night's events, you know, he's just not sure of himself.
Yeah.
He's not sure really what happened. He was a bit embarrassed, so he didn't go to the police.
Right.
Now, going back, Giles sees, you know, this police, the police coming forward. So he's too embarrassed to go to the police. But until that fateful day that the attacker's hockey mask appeared on TV,
yeah,
he knew right away.
This is that guy.
This is the guy.
This, yeah, is Sheena.
Yeah, exactly. He goes and tells his story like he did to the police, yeah, this whole story. Mark Twitchell is charged with first-degree murder of John. And Giles actually testifies against him in the murder trial. And Mark was convicted with a first-degree murder and received life in prison for this. Now, Giles even went on, because, you know, he had many nightmares and things, yeah, like that, as we all talk about. But he went on to write a book, and he went on to do interviews. There's great interviews out there, especially, yeah, the one on Dateline. Great interview. And it really tells the story, you know. And I wanted to concentrate more on Giles than I did on the actual murder, which was, yeah, interesting in itself. But, you know, I really wanted to concentrate on this survivor. So he did come out with a book of the events of the night and the actual trial. And it's called The One Who Got Away. So that's really definitely an interesting book.
Wow.
But what a survivor, dude. To know that somebody didn't make it. And that was supposed, yeah, to be you. That, yeah, was going to be you.
Yeah.
You know? And to be able to just... like he said, when he was blindfolded with the duct tape,
right,
his heart was beating. But when everything slowed down, he said, I got to be there for my family. Like, I, yeah, can't let go, you know? So that's what pushed him ahead to be able to survive. Is that not the craziest story, though?
That's sad. I mean, it's great for Giles here. I feel sorry for it. Was it John Atlinger?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, it didn't play out for him.
Yeah, exactly. But it leads you to believe, too, that, you know, they always say, if you see something, say something.
Yeah.
And I think that we all have to put our embarrassment away.
Yeah.
And if something happens to you, even as a man.
Yeah.
You know, you need to, because I know sometimes, you know, men have a certain type of ego where they have to keep up appearances and they don't want to. It's hard for them to report even harassment.
Yeah.
You know, or kind, yeah, of sexual harassment. It's hard for a man to report.
To or show something. Any kind of vulnerability.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think, you know, he should have at that time. And we shouldn't, as a society, put men down for reporting things like that.
Right.
You know, and even women, too. I mean, women are so, like, they're such advocates for themselves in a sense. Like, they're always the ones, like, this isn't good. Something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think, just like I was saying, men let their guard down because you feel safe as a man. Like, oh, I'm going to a woman's house. Right?
What's she gonna do? I've, yeah, seen her pictures. She's like 95 pounds.
Yeah, 100 pounds. Like, yeah. Yeah. How is she gonna do anything? Yeah, exactly. And originally, Giles had told people he was going out on a date, and they asked, yeah, oh, how did the date go and stuff? And he's like, oh, I got mugged. Like, oh, it was just a bad experience. I got mugged. Mm. So he didn't want to exactly admit what happened.
Right.
You know? But in retrospect, you know, we need to be comfortable to go when something bad like this happens, you know?
I feel bad. I'm not trying to blame Giles or anything, you know.
But
had he felt comfortable enough to bring this forward, it may have saved John Atlinger's life. And again, not blaming Giles, he felt pressured.
Society. That's the point. Yes, it is society that tells us, you know, as a man, we're supposed to be, in a sense, macho, and we're the protector. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't need protecting, right?
How could you let that guy catfish you into a garage and then hit you 100 times with a stun gun and duct tape you and bag you and then point a gun at you? What are you, weak?
Yeah, exactly. But see, that's the point, though, is we need to change that.
Yeah.
You know, and we need to know that there are circumstances in which a man could be in a vulnerable place.
Absolutely.
You know, and have to survive it and things like that. So this guy, Mark Thitchell, was just a freaking nutcase if you really look at his file.
Yeah.
This was an intended serial killer.
He planned it. He wrote it out. He tried it. It didn't work. He tried it again.
Yes, exactly. He was well on his way to being a serial murderer. He had set it up where he was planning to kill somebody every Friday night.
Jeez.
That was his plan.
Yeah.
So thank the Lord for these investigators who were so quick.
Yeah.
This guy, Mark, thought he was a Dexter. Mm-hmm. You know, he looked up to Dexter, and which is fictional, you know, but he looked up to Dexter. He thought he was going to do this. The investigators caught him so fast.
Yeah.
I think it started around October 8th was the first murder.
Mm-hmm.
They arrested him October 31st.
Same month. Huh?
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. So those investigators worked very quickly. There was blood on the knives. When they investigated the garage, there was blood that they found at the garage.
Wait, so if the first murder happened on October 8th and he was caught on the 31st and he had planned a murder every Friday, that leaves like 3 weeks of potential murders along the way.
Well, he was being investigated away.
Okay.
So, you know, this was tripping up his plan.
Right.
Exactly. Because they caught him almost immediately because of the directions that John sent to his friend.
Mm-hmm,
so those directions led the, he helped himself even in the afterlife.
Yeah.
Because those directions he gave his friend, which was a very smart idea, led investigators to that exact garage, and they found out that Mark had rented out that garage.
Yeah.
So, and when they asked Mark.
They climbed with everything.
Yeah.
His kill station all set up and everything.
Exactly. Exactly.
Jeez.
So is that not crazy?
Oh, that's so creepy.
I know. But I'm so
I'm
so thankful to those investigators. They were so quick to figure it out. They knew right away something was up with this guy, you know? And in a sense, he had a weird charisma to him. He was an easy talker. He was a fast talker. Like I mentioned, he was an up and coming filmmaker. So a lot of people were giving him money to start these films. He was definitely trying to put one over on the investigators, the detectives. They saw right through him. So good for them. I'm so glad that Giles was, in a sense, able to put this behind him.
Yeah.
You know, kind of
led to this guy's capture.
Yes.
Write a book.
And helped him.
Yeah.
Helped them capture him for John.
Yeah.
And he was able to write a book about his experience to move on, you know, and not be stuck like we talked about. Like, what if those victims.
That survivor's guilt almost.
Yeah. And then be stuck where you're not progressing through life. Yeah. You know, I think that's pretty much it for our episode, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that one was an intense one, right?
I know. I'm glad I went first with the shark attack.
I mean, if
this shark had, wrote out a diary about planning to attack Bethany Hamilton, and this is how I'm going to do it.
It was so horrific. Oh, if you look into the details of this guy, it was crazy. But, okay, So you can always email us your own stories. It'd be great if you can email info@theyactuallysurvived.com. You could always follow us on our social media, Andy.
They Actually Survived?
Yeah. On Instagram and Facebook. Do you have anything else?
No, that's it for this.
Okay. You got to say your slogan, though.
Oh, right. You know, pay attention, trust your nerves, and you too can actually survive.
Thanks, guys.